Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with fellow beat reporter Bob McGinn. Our podcast is brought to you by Cannon and Dunphy, and we thank them for their support. Bob, good morning.
Good morning. We have a humid Wednesday morning here, huh, Mike?
It's pretty gross.
Yeah.
I'm sweating a little bit. I wore pants. It was a bad choice. Shorts was the move today.
Always a bad call, yeah.
Always a bad call.
The air's off in the house.
Yeah.
So we're sweating.
We would not be sweating in the penthouse where I keep it too cold, and on more than one occasion you've asked me to turn the heat up to make it warmer. The penthouse stays cool.
Miss Pat and I use that air conditioning for about 10 days, Mike.
I use mine every day. My apartment in general is just really warm. Like in the wintertime, if I don't turn my heat on at all, it won't get below 68, 69 in my apartment. It's weird. Wow. It's really weird.
Extremely.
Yeah. So what do we have to catch up on since the last time we spoke to our fine listeners?
Golf, Mike.
Yes, we made the trip north to Krivitz, 50 miles. And how did it go?
Well, I hadn't thought about it or touched a club in 5 or 6 weeks, Mike.
Same.
And started out with a bang at mighty Hunter's Glen, a course we love.
Yep.
Parred the first two holes.
Yes, you did. You were even through two.
Hit the drive on number three into the so-called gorse. And I still bogeyed that one.
You did.
Escape with a bogey on number four. And then we turn to the east, and it gets a little tight, and bad stuff starts happening.
Yes.
Right.
But our lost balls were down from last year.
That's because you found every one of my wayward drives.
Yeah, that's
it was
true.
Incredible.
I must have found five or six in the woods for you.
And we each lost three total.
Yep. I don't know if you're sharing your score, but I'll share mine. I shot 100. It was bad. Actually, it wasn't that bad. I had a few. I must have finished with four pars, probably. But I had some holes that were unsightly. And too many times I would hit my drive in the fairway, but then because my iron play is so poor, I would end up making bogey or double bogey after sitting in the middle of the fairway, which is quite humiliating and infuriating.
So then you're on number six, and I had to lecture you, Mike.
About what? What was number six?
You were picking up your ball.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, Bob and I disagreed about this. Bob keeps the scores for himself of every round he plays every year, and he also keeps the scores of his competitors, or
no,
the people he plays
playing
with.
Playing partners.
Fine, playing okay. Partners. And that's fine. I'm cool with that. But I'm sure I'm not the only person out there that has ever lost their cool on a hole and just decided after six or seven or eight shots that you're done, and you pick it up and you move to the next hole. And Bob got really upset because it was going to influence his score for me. And I said to him, look, Bob, you can record your scores all you want, but I paid for my own round so I can play how I want to play. And if I want to pick up my ball, I'm going to pick up my ball. And we agreed to disagree on that.
So it was your only terrible moment. You were like in the process of three putting.
Yeah, I wasn't the one that threw a club. That was you.
I did throw on 17 on the drive.
You did throw a club on 17.
Not too far.
No.
Okay.
It was a soft toss.
We don't want any of our younger listeners to think I'm a hooligan or anything. Yeah. So that was it. Fun time was had by all.
Yep. It was a good time.
At Hunter's Glen. We highly recommend Hunter's Glen.
The course was empty.
Well, after the league, after the beginning. I mean,
after the first two holes, we didn't see another soul pretty much until the end of the round.
85 degrees out there.
It was. It was good.
And anybody who's been on that back nine in 85-degree weather, it's a grind, Mike.
It's definitely a grind. I felt like I was fighting for the majority of the afternoon.
All right, now, Mike, let's discuss the music.
Yeah, so the music, I thought about using this 2 weeks ago when it was my last selection, but I decided not to. The song is called Look at Little Sister by Stevie Ray Vaughan, and Stevie Ray Vaughan has an unfortunate connection to the state of Wisconsin. He was playing a concert in Alpine Valley. Where is that exactly?
Southwest of Milwaukee a little bit.
Okay, so he was going to...
East Troy?
He was going to go from Alpine Valley to Chicago by helicopter. There were four helicopters, and his crashed almost immediately after takeoff. And I think everyone on the helicopter was killed, pilots, passengers alike. And it was a shame. He was 35 years old, considered to be one of the best electric guitarists of all time. One of my top two or three favorite guitarists ever. And so I just love listening to his music, that blues style, the smoothness with which he plays. So that's Look at Little Sister. We'll hear a little more of it on the way out.
Good.
Now we're on to the Packers. Let's start with the story that was in today's paper. Today is Wednesday morning, 11:43 Central Time as I speak, And I wrote a story about Jayrone Elliott. You know, Jayrone is a guy who, I don't know about you, but I thought coming into this season he was actually going to have, you know, a chance to earn himself a larger role. You know, he's a guy that has a lot of potential in terms of athleticism. He makes plays that at times you think, wow, this guy should contribute a lot more. And then at other times he sort of fades into the background. The year before I got here, he had 5 sacks in the exhibition season, or 4 sacks, whatever it was.
Led the league.
And last year, 2 turnovers forced in the game against Seattle, a fumble and then an interception to seal it. And then he just sort of drifted away. It's been a rough go for Jayrone, hasn't it, this camp?
Yeah, it has. He's winless in the one-on-one drill. 0-13?
11.
11, yeah.
He didn't take any yesterday.
Yeah, that was different. It just hasn't been able to turn it loose. I don't know. He's gained some weight. I don't know, 8 to 10 pounds, he told me at the start of camp.
Yep, he's up to 255.
And there's no question he had to be more physical. He had to be stronger against the run, setting the edge. And he hoped to gain that by gaining the weight. I don't know if it's limited his pass rush, his explosion off the edge, but he just can't. He runs, he goes wide almost every time, and he does not have enough burst to turn that corner, and he's getting pushed wide out of the play every time.
So when he appeared in, I guess, sort of rare appearances last season, where he'd get a few snaps a game, and then another game he wouldn't play almost at all, and then he'd come back for a few snaps, do you think that when he has those moments of production, do you think that is the level of talent that he can achieve on a regular basis? Or do you think that he's just not quite at the level where that consistency can be expected? Because there's a difference between guys who have the talent to be consistent over and over and other guys who are going to wow you once in a while, but then they just don't, they can't put it together. I don't know.
Based on 2.5 years, Mike, I'd have to say he is a flash player.
I agree.
That's the definition of that, and there hasn't been enough good stuff to think he's a consistent force.
So do you think special teams will save him? Talk about his role in what special teams, you know, what he's been on special teams.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote today, Mike, he's on them all. He's a long guy, 6'3", 255, runs pretty darn good, 6'3.5", I think he is. He's a good player, tries hard on special teams, he's a smart guy. He's into it. He knows that's been his ticket to a roster berth. Maybe it is going to save him. I don't know.
It'll be close. It'll be close.
Right.
The one thing I pointed out near the end of the article is that the person who might be able to match him in terms of physical traits on special teams also happens to be a person who might be his biggest competitor for a roster spot, and that's Laurenti McCray, the street free agent that signed with the Packers this summer. McCray, I don't have the article in front of me, but I think he's 6'2", 245, so within an inch, and he weighs what Elliott weighed last year, so within 10 pounds of Elliott now, and he ran 4.80, whereas Elliott ran 4.77. So that's pretty close. You know, they don't have a lot of those body types on special teams. You think about the guys that are out there usually, Demarius Randall, Quentin Rollins, Chris Banjo, Dimitri Goodson. These are smaller, faster guys, and they don't have a lot of these bigger guys that can run. So if McCray can show that he can contribute on special teams in a manner that's even remotely similar to what Elliott does, I think he might get the nod, because at least for me, McCray has been impressive from scrimmage.
So let's look at Kyler Fackrell now, Mike, okay?
Sure.
And Reggie Gilbert. Now, I still think Gilbert has slightly outperformed Fackrell for a month. But Gilbert's a free agent. Fackrell's got a big signing bonus as a third rounder. And the support of the entire personnel department, I'm sure, who believed in the guy coming out of Utah State. Is Fackrell as good as Elliott right now? The obvious answer is no.
Right.
He's not really close.
Right.
From scrimmage or from teams?
Agree with both, yeah. Closer from scrimmage than teams, I'd say.
Has Fackrell done anything aggressive on teams?
It's hard to say. Hard to say.
Right, it is. I don't know that. McCray's the most aggressive of the three. He's a tough guy. He plays hard. Special teams personality.
Now, one thing that I think does bode well for Elliott, and it's going to sound weird, is the suspension of Mike Pinnell. Because I think there's a direct correlation between Pinnell's suspension and the number of snaps Julius Peppers and Dayton Jones will take with their hand down, meaning as a defensive lineman, most likely in sub-package situations, nickel and dime. So if those guys are getting more reps in the dime and the nickel packages, I think it opens up an opportunity for Elliott at outside linebacker, simply because if those guys are taking snaps there and the majority of their playing time is coming there, then there's got to be more reps to be divvied around at the outside linebacker position. Yeah. So that could help him, but I don't know. I think if they made the cuts today, I don't think he makes the team.
These OLBs are fighting all the depth at DB.
Exactly.
Which is incredible right now at both corner and safety. We'll get into that in a second with the kid from Milwaukee, Marwin Evans. But I'll just mention this. Just the other day, McKinton Dorliant, the free agent corner from Northern Iowa, just back now about a week, he looked like Josh Hawkins yesterday doing some of the stuff. I mean, he is a very talented young corner. They're the exact same height, 5'10 and a half, exact speed, 4'3'9. And Dorliant made plays. I can see why the Packers were so high on this guy.
He had an interception yesterday in practice.
And a bunch of breakups.
Yep.
And Hawkins has had a really good camp.
Yeah, Hawkins had two breakups in the one-on-one receiver corner drill yesterday.
And I still kind of like to see Warren Gatewood a little more. He's been injured, but, I mean, he's behind Dorliant and Hawkins. And I don't think Randall Jetty from UMass is that bad either. Personally, he doesn't run well, but I kind of like his instincts from the slot.
Well, let's get to the DBs in a second. Let's finish up with the outside linebacker. So
the
pairings right now are, I guess, Matthews and Perry, you know, on the one line. Then they've had Peppers and Dayton, I guess, on the two line.
That sounds like NCAA basketball tournament talk.
The two line.
Yeah.
The seeds.
I hate that stuff.
Why?
The three line, the four line, all these suits up there talking like that.
Are you bitter because the blue didn't do very well last year?
I forgot about that season, Mike. Can't we just say ones, the twos, the two line, the three line? Where did that come from into the vernacular?
I'm going to say the one line and two line just to aggravate you.
Go for it. You're a basketball writer, okay.
So on the two line, we've got Dayton Jones and Julius Peppers. And then, I don't know, do you think they're going to play more than four guys on the perimeter in the course of a game?
No.
Okay. So then some combination of Elliott, McCray, Fackrell, Gilbert aren't going to see a lot of reps anyway.
No. So special teams looms large.
Exactly.
Okay.
Although I do think McCray could get in there on the outside. I've been kind of impressed with him. His burst is better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So now let's get to your Marwin Evans story, which appears in tomorrow's paper, actually, right?
Friday, right.
Yeah, Friday's paper. No.
Thursday's
paper.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's done. I see it printed out in front of me here. Tell the listeners a little bit about Marwin.
Not many players from Milwaukee, Mike, in the NFL. This kid was born and raised in Milwaukee on the north side by North 57th and West Congress Street. His dad was gunned down, murdered when he was two, Marwin Sr. Raised by his mom, Janelle. Marwin was a Chapter 220. He bussed over to Oak Creek High School. He bussed an hour each day his first 3 years. Senior year, he got a car, played at Oak Creek. Not a great player. He was undersized, played corner, played safety, more corner. Just wasn't recruited, did not pay attention to his academics. Went to two different JCs in 2 years, 1 year at each. Signed at Utah State, redshirted there. First year, backed up, but little special teams, hardly played from scrimmage his fourth year. Fifth year, started 14 games and had a good year. He wasn't even signed. Now, okay, at Pro Day, Mike, he ran 4.47 at 2.11.
Okay.
A 42-inch vertical jump, which would have been bigger, longer than any player at the combine. 41.5 was the best this year. Some years it's 45. This year it was 41.5. And 19 reps on the bench. Why wasn't this guy was not offered a contract by anybody in the hours after the draft? He had nothing going on. Seattle offered him, gave him a chance to go to their mini camp. They took him. He worked out there for 3 days, was not signed. On the flight back, Packers called his agent, said, get up here on Monday. He went up there, took a physical, and they signed him. Why wasn't this guy offered anything with those numbers and a good senior year? Because he let his academics slip. He had bad grades out of Oak Creek. And then when the combine scout came through Logan, Utah, his junior year before his senior year, probably March of that season, he gave short shrift to when they administered the 12-minute Wunderlich test. He admits it now. He never should have done it. That was.
What do you mean?
It was after the workout that day in Logan. Kyler Fackrell would have been working out that day and all probably 10, 12 other guys at Utah State. He drank a bunch of water preparing for the workout. Now the guy says, all right, let's go in this room. I'm going to give you this Wunderlich test, intelligence. They don't know these guys are young. They don't know what's going on with this test. They don't have agents at that point. They probably don't even have no clue what this is. Sit in that room. Here's a piece of paper and a pencil. You got 12 minutes. Answer as many as you can. On your mark, get set, go. Well, he said he was mad. He just didn't see any value in this. Then he had to go to the bathroom once or twice, at least once during this 12-minute test. Turns out, you know what he scores? A 6. Safety is a position where you look for intelligence, Mike, big time. He scores a 6. Now, he graduates with a degree in sociology and a minor in criminal justice. I asked him, I said, what do you want to do after football? FBI. This guy is no dummy. His high school coach said at Oak Creek, he just didn't apply himself. Some kids get in, light goes on later, and that's what happened with Marwin. This is a smart kid.
Off the top of your head, do you remember what, just for context purposes, what Morgan Burnett and Clinton Dix would have on the test?
No, I don't.
No? Okay.
So, Evans, so if you're a personnel director or a GM, and it's a week before the draft, and I know this, maybe 2 weeks before, you start going through your free agent. You got hundreds and hundreds of names. And you start preparing, okay, who are we going to put on our board? And then who are we going to call seconds after the draft or in the middle of that seventh round? And you're going through Marwin Evans, and the area guy out there for that team out in the West Coast says, all right, this guy has got good, really good physical numbers. Had a decent senior year, one-year starter, that's down. And they're looking at his raw numbers, and, oh, my God, a 6? Now, there's hundreds of players. You don't have time to go give a Marwin Evans other test or face up to him in a personal interview. You don't have time. You see 6, you see safety, you reject him. And that's what happened to Marwin Evans. I'm convinced of it. And you just reject him. And John Schneider out in Seattle, he has Wisconsin. Obviously, he's born and raised in this state. He gives the kid from Milwaukee a shot. The Packers, they know everything about this state. They give the kid a shot. And they got a player. Now, can I keep going, Mike? The way he played in this Oakland game, it was a revelation. I mean, all our talk about Kentrell Bryce, and he's earned all of it. Evans was every bit as good, if not better. Like 5 tackles, Mike, in this game. On that interception by Hawkins, he killed not one, but two members of the Oakland offense on blocks. He gave up the one pass, 31 yards, when he didn't plaster, but Connor Cook had the ball 7 seconds before he released it. One scout said, if the Packers let him go, they'll play against him. You can't tackle as well as this guy tackle and run 4-4 and not have a place. I believe with these numbers and that tape, he also had a heck of a play in coverage in the Brown game. Numbers and tape, he's going to get on a practice squad. It's either going to be Green Bay or somewhere else. He could get claimed on waivers. The problem is Green Bay has such a load of safeties right now.
So, okay, if you were to go back in time to May and you said these personnel directors see 6 and they reject him, then they look at the tape and the guy can play, why would that alleviate completely their concerns to the point where somebody would add him to a practice squad? Would they be calling the agent and say, well, what happened on this test? Or why did he get a 6? Or,
oh, after the draft?
No, I mean like now. Like they're debate watching this tape and they see how well he played and then they know that cuts are coming up and the Packers have such depth there, are they trying to figure out more about what happened that day? Or are they still hesitant, despite the good tape, because of the 6?
Okay, let me say this. I swear, of the other 31 teams, you got a bunch of guys in pro looking through the tape of every game that's played, and I would say right now, the way he played in that Oakland game, 27 or 28 of those 31 teams know about Marwin Evans, and just what you said, they're doing more investigation. They know the 6, They can't call the Packer people right now. That's verboten. You can't go doing that.
Could they call the agent?
Absolutely, Derek Fox. They could call the coaches at Utah State. They could recheck with their area guy, their West Coast guy, say, hey, what about this? What?
Right.
So they're thinking about it big time. They want to see the next two tapes. They're going to be studying the heck out of this player. So Marwin knows this, and he knows how crucial it is to play well the next two games.
So let's talk about where he fits in at the safety position.
Yep.
You know, the two starters, of course, are Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and Morgan Burnett. Well, what do we got behind it?
Micah Hyde's number three, don't you think, Mike?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Burnett's been out with a back, and Hyde's been in there.
Hyde's going to play a lot.
Agreed.
Sub stuff.
Yep.
All right, number four entering camp is Chris Banjo. He was four last year, and he's four right now. He is their best special teams player.
By far.
He's the heart and soul of that.
Yep.
He does it. He's first down. He's committed. He's bright, and he's a pretty darn good safety.
He runs better than I thought he did.
Definitely.
He can really fly for a guy that's built pretty muscular when you look at him.
His time was 4.43, but I asked Banjo last year about that, and he thinks he's under 4.4 now. Could be. I don't know.
Man.
All right. Now you continue after that, Mike.
So then we've got Kentrell Bryce, who up until the breakout game by Marwin was probably fifth, right?
He still is fifth.
Still
he played terrific
okay.
in that game, Mike. Okay. Just like Marwin. He played terrific. Are you kidding me?
The one guy that's kind of gone by the wayside here is another street free agent that the Packers brought in. Is this Jermaine Whitehead. I mean, he's showed up a couple times in practice, but he hasn't caught my attention the way the other two have.
No, he hasn't. He's okay.
And he's not bad on teams. I have seen him make some plays on teams.
Yep.
But, so I don't know. So, okay. How many do you think they can possibly keep? And as a corollary to that, when they're making their decisions, do you think they'll view Hyde as a safety or a corner?
Safety. I do.
Okay. I think they're going to keep five.
Then they're going to keep four D linemen, Mike. And bring back Pinnell after somebody gets hurt after a month. It's got to come from somewhere because you're going to keep a whole bunch of corners. I mean, are we saying Bryce is better than Dorlant and Hawkins? That's the argument they're thinking of.
True. Good point. Who's better on teams among those three?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
These are, and Evans, Bryce's look better than Evans for a month.
So who's more likely to get claimed on the final cut day, Bryce or Evans on waivers?
Probably neither.
Okay.
Teams love their 53, Mike. They're not going to be wholesale claiming.
Do you think they'd put two safeties on the practice squad?
Possible.
Okay.
That is possible.
Yeah.
Could Bryce get claimed with those numbers? It's possible.
It's possible, but I still think no.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And the cornerback position is just as interesting. Now, I don't know what the Packers think about Robertson Daniel. I know what they thought last year, but I don't know what they've thought of his camp this year. But personally, I think Dorlant and Hawkins have been more consistent than Daniel. Daniel has the physique, the speed, and some of the traits to make some really impressive plays. But he's also given up a lot of receptions. And I just wonder how that balances out in the coaches' minds.
That's Dorlant, right?
No, Robertson Daniel.
Oh, Daniel, okay.
Yeah, Daniel, I think, has some tremendous physical tools, and he can do some things that make you say, wow, this guy's a player. But I think he's given up too many receptions, and I think Dorlant and Hawkins have been more consistent in coverage than he has all camp.
You might be right. I'm not sure that I can stack those three players. I just don't know.
And I've watched Robertson Daniel a lot, as you know, because I pay attention to those guys on special teams a lot, what they do. So I've tried to watch them a ton on special teams, where Daniel is a hold-up man and a gunner, and then contrast that with what they've done as a DB. So I try and look at that both ways. Mm-hmm. Also, why I've noticed Dorlant and Hawkins, because they've been used as reserve hold-up men and gunners.
Mm, okay.
It's a mess there, isn't it?
Goodson suspended.
Yeah.
What if he was in contention for all this? I mean, it'd be.
You thought he had a decent camp?
Yes.
I know our colleague Tom Silverstein disagrees.
I know.
pretty vehemently too.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I don't know what to think of Goodson.
Yeah.
He's a good special teams player. There's no doubt about that. He can give you a lot of physicality on teams.
I think he's been better at the ball. I like his speed and I love his special teams.
Okay.
So, Randall Jetty, hey, he might be last at corner. I still kind of like the guy. I'm not saying he's going to make it. He might never see the light of day in football after this, you know. But he does have instincts from that slot. He's a sneaky kind of a guy, and I like him. And he's a pretty good blitzer, too, Mike.
Yeah, he's not bad.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about another, while we stay on the defense here before we switch to the offense later in the podcast, let's talk about another story I wrote earlier this week on Carl Bradford. What do you think of what Carl's done in camp so far? It's impressed me and surprised me.
Well, I want to hear what you say, Mike. I'll say about five words on Carl. Surprising, consistent.
You got three more words.
Tough, good to see. Gone through a lot.
Right,
I'm done.
This is way over five words now. So yeah, Carl Bradford has really caught my attention. I never doubted the guy's effort, and all the coaches tell you that he always plays really, really hard, even when he was struggling in practice and games and things last year during the exhibition season. He always played with a ton of effort, but this year he started to make plays. He's showing really good instincts this year. When the ball is snapped, he's going somewhere. He's not standing in place for a half second, three quarters of a second, and then having to diagnose at that point once the play is pretty well underway. So I've been very impressed with his instincts. He's had two interceptions in camp. He also had an interception on the last day of minicamp. So that's three interceptions he's had in the last 2 months of practice, if you go back to June. And I thought he played pretty well in the game. You know, there were still some times, as you pointed out in your film analysis, where his instincts sometimes betray him a little bit. His speed is not necessarily as fast as you'd like it to be. But when he had the opportunity to play with some physicality, he did. And another area that's going to be key for Carl is special teams. And against the Raiders, we saw him take reps on the first team kickoff coverage and first team kickoff return, which he hadn't done before. And I asked Jaron Elliott a couple days ago, does it really mean something when a new guy comes into the kickoff units? Or is that just the coaches trying to rotate and give everyone a chance? And he said, no, it does mean something. He said, those are the guys that they really want to test and see if they can hang at the highest level. So where does he fit in, Bob?
Okay, I assume Jake Ryan will be back with his hamstring. We got Martinez and we got Barrington. I assume his foot's going to be fine. So that's three, right?
Yep.
The fourth best in this camp, I think, has been Joe Thomas a little bit over Carl Bradford.
I agree.
Thomas has been not a revelation, but he's been an improved player in year three.
No doubt.
He's a hitter. He's bigger. He's been more forceful and more reactionary.
He's way better on special teams than Bradford is right now.
Okay. All right.
Do you think there's any scenario in which they only keep Ryan, Martinez, and Barrington knowing that they have Matthews to shift over if these three guys don't work, and then that would give them an extra guy to save at safety or corner?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Or the D-line with four.
True.
You could save a body there.
So what do you think? How many inside backers will they take? I still think they'll take four. But I do think it's possible that they'll entertain the possibility of only keeping three.
Yeah, the odds are four. Boniquas Brown, he's got an uphill climb.
So does Carl have any practice squad eligibility left?
Yeah, definitely he does.
Okay. But Joe Thomas would not.
Well, four of the ten, Mike, can have two accrued seasons this year and a new rule.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So definitely most guys have it nowadays. It makes it a lot easier.
Okay. So let's say, who's a second-year player this year? Or who's a third-year player this year?
Well, Bradford.
Easier example, Davante Adams. So
right.
He played his first 2 years, right? He's not going to get cut, I don't think. But if he magically got cut, would he be eligible for the practice squad, given that he played like every game of two full seasons? He'd only have two accrued years.
I think there's a number of games involved
okay.
with that as
yeah.
well.
I don't understand that rule
yet. I
don't
think so.
I got to look
sure.
it up.
Yeah.
Okay. The inside backer situation is really interesting, too. I guess whoever they don't keep with Thomas or Bradford, do you think those are guys that could get claimed?
No.
No? Okay.
You know, it always looks great from here, but, you know, people forget, we forget. There's 31 other teams working their butts off and got guys fighting and competing and playing well, too, you know? You just forget that. You get tunnel vision, myopic here, and fans do as well. And, hey, everybody else has got smart coaches and good players.
I agree. Well, we're going to take a short break from a word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and switch to the offensive side of the ball.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
So we had a little bit of news earlier this week in relation to the starting center position. Mike McCarthy, head coach of the Packers, basically said earlier this week that J.C. Treader has earned the starting job. He will be the starting center for the remainder of the exhibition season and week one against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Part of the reason for that, of course, is the injury to Corey Linsley. And from what we learned yesterday, when Linsley spoke to reporters in the locker room, it sounds like that hamstring is a mess, doesn't it, Bob?
Yeah, it does. He hurt it in mid-May. He hurt it worse in July, working on his own.
Tear both times, torn both times.
We don't know the degree of the tear.
Although he did say the second one was worse.
Yeah.
It sounds brutal.
Don't know. That's an element of strength, obviously, in addition to running on screens. I don't know. So he'll be on this PUP list for, 6 weeks, and then could come back after nine, somewhere in there. Might not play at all.
Yeah, might not play at all. I mean, he wants to, obviously, but I think there's a chance that he doesn't. So for people that are unfamiliar with Treader or didn't see a whole lot of him, in what ways are Treader and Linsley similar or different?
Treader's 6'3 and a half. Linsley's 6'2 and a half. You definitely can see that just watching. They're both around 300. Treader's a little faster. Linsley's definitely stronger. He had 36 on the bench. Treader had 29 coming out of Cornell. Linsley, I guess you would, based on talking to scouts and watching these guys for, several years now, Linsley is a stronger guy in the box. I'd say Treader is better to the second level, but not by much at the linebacker level. Pass pro, Linsley was fantastic his first year. He slipped back his second year. Want to see more Treader as a pass-blocking center. Intelligence, both highly intelligent, very smart communicators. These are both starting centers, I think, in the NFL. We got to see if Treader can hold up physically for a long grind against powerful nose tackles, and that's what I wrote about the other day. We know Linsley can. Linsley's a really strong person, and whatever athletic limitations Linsley might have, and there's not many, he makes up for it in strength.
How much of a drop-off is there between the two guys? It's not a lot, is it? I mean, it's not none, but I don't think it's significant.
I wish I could really answer that definitively. I don't know right now.
I've just been very impressed by Treader's athleticism. And so there's been times where, he does get out and move his feet a little bit. And I just think that could provide a different element, whether it's the screen game or whatever the case may be. I'm interested to see how he does there. But like you said, I agree. I think they're both starting centers in this league. And, of course, this is a contract year for Treader. So this is a huge season for him.
It is, yeah.
Because he has five position versatility, right?
Yeah. I don't think he's much of a guard.
Okay, fair enough.
But I think he's shown he can play left tackle and right tackle. He's okay. Guard, he's been overpowered some when he's played.
Okay.
He's not a real robust guy.
No, he's not.
He's 300 pounds. He's leaned out. He thinks he's stronger, but he's not, you're going to see him get trashed and thrown.
His build reminds me a little bit of Spriggs. In that when you look at the majority of the remainder of the linemen, Sitton, Lang, Walker, Taylor, Bakhtiari, all those guys have a little bit of something hanging over their belt in terms of a stomach. And when you look at Treader and Spriggs, it's flat up and down. I mean, they look like just a guy that's got a flat stomach. Mm-hmm. And it's because they've got a lot of muscle and not a lot of extra weight that they carry.
Do you like what Treader's done in this camp?
Yeah, I do. One of the things, and again, you mentioned it, both of these guys are very intelligent. But when I was talking to a couple of the linemen earlier this week about Treader, they said that it's wholly obvious in meetings how smart he is. Not to say that it's not obvious that Lindsley's intelligent too, but that's one of the first things they mentioned. And I asked Josh Walker, I said, this guy's played a ton of positions. He's got a decent amount of versatility. What's his best asset? And Walker said, without question, his brain. You know, he's just so smart. He knows all the calls. He knows all the shifts. He can diagnose things well. And he played in an Ivy League school. That's kind of what you'd expect.
Yep. Mike Pinnell, I asked him. He's been in the league 3 years now, and I asked Pinnell about Treader. And he's going against his share of nose tackles as both a one-tech and a three-tech. And Pinnell said...
Centers.
He's going against, centers. Yeah. And Pinnell said, he definitely said Lindsley's stronger, but he said Treader still has strength. He said Treader is very smart, just like you said. And he thinks there's a lot of very average centers starting, and he thinks Treader can be a starter.
So if Lindsley is not able to play this season, how much does playing Treader at center nonstop all season hurt the depth of this offensive line?
Well, it does hurt it.
I think it's kind of significant.
No doubt about it.
And the reason I say that is because Don Barclay would probably be the backup center at this point to Treader. So Barclay would play there. I don't know who they would play at right tackle. I thought Barclay, you thought Spriggs as a backup. Spriggs would be the backup left tackle without question. They've got Lane Taylor and Josh Walker at guard. But I think you could argue that going into this year, their most reliable backup lineman would have been Treader. At least I would have made that argument.
But at tackle, Mike, if either tackle goes down, it wouldn't have been Treader. It would have been Spriggs.
Okay. I still think Barclay would have played right tackle. He's played there before and had success, and Spriggs hasn't taken a snap at right tackle all camp.
In the one-on-ones, he has.
Okay, but fine. In 11-on-11, I don't think he has.
Could be Kyle Murphy.
It could be. All right, fine. We've come to that portion of the show where I owe Bob an apology. Last week, I was wrong.
You were?
I was very wrong. I said that Kyle Murphy, I didn't think he was good. I said I thought his body was poor. I thought he was in danger of not making the team. And I was wrong. I was totally wrong. He came after that. He had one practice prior to that exhibition game against the Raiders, and he came out and played his tail off against some pretty good pass rushers, including Bruce Irvin, who the Raiders signed as a free agent from Seattle, right?
Yeah.
And he was great, and I watched him yesterday in the one-on-one pass rush drill. You and I were standing next to each other. He was great again. The guy competes in a way that you don't expect after observing him and listening to him talk. He's just got a feistiness to him that I didn't think was there. So I'll own that one. I was wrong. And
well, you might be right. What if he struggles out in San Francisco, Mike?
Well,
could happen.
You were right in the short
term. Don't go too far right now.
Okay.
Yeah, Murphy was okay. So we'll see this week. You know, Stanford's produced a lot of linemen. Garnett, Pete, DeCastro. I mean, a lot of top guys. He's been around them. They coach him hard out there, so he's learned from that.
When you were writing about him in your film analysis, you had a line that I wanted to ask you about. You said that he could be a guy that plays guard in time. Now, why would you think that he's a guy that could move inside, or why would teams try and move a guy inside instead of taking a guard and trying to put him outside? Why would that be a natural move for him?
Well, just because you only dress seven, Mike, and you got all these tackles got to play guard. You know what I mean? They just have to. And, okay, it's 6'6.5". He doesn't look like a guard, but guards are getting taller all the time. He's got to put on a lot of weight to play inside at 6'6.5". He's 308 right now. Yeah, Spriggs is 303. God, to play guard effectively at that height, got to be 315 at least.
So why do all tackles need to know how to play guard, but not all guards need to know how to play tackle?
Guards that are 6'2.5" have no chance to play tackle. Now, they need to at least, once that final 53 is set, right, Mike?
Right.
And you got seven active, most teams are doing that, the guards got to take reps at tackle.
Yeah, they have to know something about
it. But they can't do it.
Okay.
You can't go sticking, wow, who's a short guard? Bill Ferrario. McIntyre, Lane. Harry Galbraith, they can't play tackle.
Lane Taylor's not that tall.
6'3".
I thought
right.
He was shorter than that. Okay.
6'3", 324.
Okay.
No, he can't play tackle. But he'd have to have taken reps the last couple of years to be active on game day.
Anything else about the young tackles you want to bring up?
No.
All right, let's move on to special teams, where the punting competition continues. And if you remember last year, general manager Ted Thompson brought Cody Mandel in to compete against Tim Mastey. Mandel punted at Alabama, and he was out of here in 12 days. 12 days he was out of here, Bob.
Well, he was here all offseason, too. But,
true, but yeah. During camp he lasted 12 days.
Right.
I think we're on day 23 today, 22, 23, somewhere in there, and Mortel's still here, still getting a ton of reps. What did you make of the format change that Ron Zook put into practice this week, where instead of each guy alternating within the course of the same practice, Mastey took 15 punts 2 days ago, and yesterday Mortel punted 25 times?
25, but if you kind of, in retrospect, really thinking about it, Mike, the first 10 were not with a rush, so he had 15 also against a rush. So, you know, let's call it 15 and 15. I don't know, just change it up, huh? They've been going by 2 and 2 and 2. How were the results? Mastey on Monday, Mortel on Tuesday.
I think both of them had some unbelievable punts at times. They were aided by a little bit of wind both days, I think, but there were some booming punts. I thought that Mastey, aside from that one that you told me he shanked into the bleachers, I thought he actually looked pretty good. Directionally, he was getting them very close to the sideline, if not, you know, hitting inbounds and then bouncing out of bounds. Mortel, I thought, had probably a few more missed kicks, and by that I don't necessarily mean shanks, but some that were supposed to be directional that wound up in the middle of the field. I don't really know. I thought Mastey was a touch better. What did you think?
Yeah, my average hang, and hang is only one thing, but that's a key element, and that's what I just considered. I think Mastey was 4.45 on his 15 Monday, and Mortel was 3.99 on his 15 Tuesday.
That's a significant difference.
Yes, it is. So I would give Mastey the lead right now. They'll punt again this week, and then it might be a decision.
By 75, you think? By the cuts for 75, they might make that choice?
Sure.
Okay. What have you thought of Crosby so far?
Because he's a lock, I haven't really paid all that much attention, Mike.
Yeah,
what do you think?
No, I think that his leg looks as strong as it ever has. You know, he makes these 47, 48, 52, 53, and it doesn't – I mean, they clear the crossbar by 6, 7, 8 feet. You know, he's got the leg. I think he has the leg to go 58, 59 if the Packers ever really needed it. Now, if he's trying to do that in December on Lambeau Field grass with snow, I don't know if he can. But in September, if they had a game-winning situation and it was close to 60, I think he has the leg to do it. The other thing that I haven't really noticed, because we haven't had a lot of issues, I don't think there's been a big difference between Mortel and Mastey as holders. There hasn't been a lot of issues that I remember, whereas last year Mandel was bobbling and had a ton of misses with Mastey.
We haven't had a lot of snafus.
Exactly.
What are those called, those military acronyms?
I guess so.
You know, FUBAR, and there's a list of about 25 of these, Mike. You better look that up and have some laughs.
Abel Baker Trout.
more like FUBAR, you know? You can figure out what those things. Yeah, there's some wild ones.
All right, and when we wrap up special teams here, let's talk a little bit about punt and kick return. So last year going into camp, Ty Montgomery was going to be the number one kick returner. He had the job. He actually returned really, really well against Chicago. Then he got hurt. Jeff Janis takes over. So far in camp, we've seen the most kick returns by... We've seen Aberderis back there. We've seen Micah Hyde back there. We've seen Trevor Davis back there. And just recently, now that he's starting to get back into it, we've seen Ty Montgomery. How do you sort of handicap that race? Or who do you think it might end up being?
I haven't really thought about it, Mike.
Okay.
I'm sure you have.
I have.
You pay a lot of attention to this. I give you a lot of credit. I kind of check out during those periods sometime.
Okay. Well, what's interesting to me is structurally how the Packers have lined up in kick return. Last year, when Montgomery was there, he was back deep pretty much by himself. And Micah Hyde would be a couple yards in front of him, maybe about the 5-yard line, but he wasn't looking to return the ball ever. He was looking to be that first guy in front of Montgomery as a blocker. Same thing when Janis took the job late in November in that game against Minnesota. This year I've noticed, though, that Hyde, or whoever is the second guy, is standing back at the goal line, almost as if they're using two returners, two guys that have the option to take the the return. In other words, if Aberderis is on the left and Hyde is on the right and the kick goes to the right, Aberderis is not moving across to catch that ball as much. So I wonder if that's a change that the Packers are actually going to utilize, or if it's just something they're toying with in camp. But that has really jumped out to me.
Well, don't you think with this, the start rule of the 25, some of these kickers are going to start going for the corners.
Absolutely.
And then if they have two guys on the same plane, they can cut that off easier. Yeah.
The last two practices, so the two that we saw this week, Trevor Davis has gotten a lot of reps.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if they're taking a look at him there. I still have questions of whether he can return kicks physically, because, I mean, those guys run full on into some hard tackles. And that's why a guy like Janis, who's built the way he was, and Montgomery even, and I mentioned this to you the other day, doesn't he kind of look like a running back the way he's built?
Yeah.
Those guys have so much more muscle on their frame than Davis does. But Aberderis is a slender guy as well. And if I had to guess right now, I would say opening day kickoff is Aberderis and Hyde. That's kind of my guess.
Hmm.
And then eventually I think they'd like Montgomery to get back there.
Okay. Yeah, you're probably right.
What do you think about punt return? I think it's still going to be Hyde with the job. I think they like him back there. And last year, I think, could have been a little bit of a fluke maybe with some of the stuff they have, but I think Hyde takes that job.
He's mishandled a few in this camp.
Has he really? Okay, I haven't noticed that.
At least two.
Okay.
Over the whole thing, and he's got great hands. Yeah, I guess Hyde. And there's a tremendous emphasis on picking up this part of the game, so maybe that'll help him.
Have you watched Rick Lovato at all recently? I have not really.
Nothing's been bad.
See, the long snapper is a guy, and you feel for guys like this, where we only really notice them when they screw up. You know what I mean? You know, we wouldn't even pay attention at all to Maste as a holder or Mortel as a holder. The only reason you know it is because you count the times they screw up. And so Lovato, I think, has been better, steady, since the beginning of camp. But I don't know. I think he's going to be their long snapper.
How many people, Mike, 25 years from now, can identify Jesse Schmidt?
People or journalists?
Fans.
Oh, fans.
Are there fans who can remember Jesse Schmidt 25 years from now? One practice, right, Mike?
Yeah, one practice, one rep. Well, two reps.
Two reps, but one with a good mitt.
Yeah, exactly.
And one with a bad mitt.
Yeah.
A broken fourth metacarpal.
Yeah.
Jesse Schmidt from Purdue.
How many people can remember him 20 years from now?
Yeah.
5% or less.
Boy. Packer trivia nuts, huh? They could have Jesse.
I mean, honestly, if you... Okay, let's put it even in a more recent term. If you asked people to name guys that started at inside linebacker 2 years ago, how many fans could come up with all of them? How many fans are going to come up with Jamari Lattimore, you know?
Yeah.
That's just 2 years ago, and I don't think a lot of people could name every guy that started at inside backer.
There's a lot of Packer trivia experts, Mike.
Who started at inside backer that year? You had Hawk. You had...
Brad Jones.
Barrington. Yeah. Lattimore. Matthews. Anybody cool. else?
Sounds about right.
I mean, that's a lot of guys you got to remember.
True.
So I don't know. Poor Jesse Schmidt. But he got his injury settlement, so he got something out of it.
You know, sometimes, Mike, the older you get, when you see a number on the field, you just think of all the other people who have worn this jersey in Green Bay.
Right.
This happens to me every now and then. I don't know. I'll see Hyde, and that's, what was that guy, that running back? Jim Culbreth, a running back. I'm pretty sure he was 33. Just weird stuff like that. And I'm sure fans get that same feeling.
Could be.
There's people who follow this team for 60, 70 years, you know?
Yep.
A lot longer than I've been around. Yep.
All right, let's take a couple questions here before we wrap this up. Let's see.
Mike, I'm going to check on Culbreth's number.
All right, I'll answer the first question while you check on that. All right, this question comes from Brendan Kennedy. I know Brendan has asked questions before, so we thank you for listening. Brendan wants to know, how does Jared Cook compare to JerMichael Finley in terms of athleticism, route running, hands, etc.?
Culbreth is 31. Sorry, everybody.
Oh, what a shame.
That's bad.
And you were having a good podcast up until that point, Bob.
Semi.
But all it takes is one rep, as we know.
Mike, I want to return one little thing to 33.
Okay.
I'm going to say Jesse Clark, okay?
All right, fine. Jesse Clark. All right, now to this question about Cook and JerMichael Finley. So if you look at their numbers coming out of school, Cook's physical traits are better than Finley's in just about every category. He was faster. He's taller. He had better numbers on the bench. So to me, Cook is a guy that, in terms of the measurables, is above Finley. Route running, I can't really say. I didn't watch Finley other than what I saw studying to write that story that I wrote about him this summer when I went and visited him. In terms of hands, now I do know that Jermichael struggled with drops throughout his career. Bob and I have talked about that. I can't think of any balls. I mean, I'm sure he has maybe one drop in camp, but I can't think of anything that Cook has dropped, and I thought he's actually been pretty steady in that regard. So that would be a comparison of those guys. Bob, this is a question I think is kind of interesting. This comes from Pat, and Pat, I think, is a new listener, or a new question asker at least. In regards to special teams, is there a 40 speed range that's quote-unquote required? What would be a good speed for guys on special teams, or what would be too slow that you don't necessarily want them out there?
Well, Pat, it just depends on the position, you know. Let's go to Ladarius Gunter from last year. Now, he struggled on teams, and you can see it. Oh, when he was a hold-up guy, and he has, you know, maybe the guy would beat him, beat his initial jam, and then they got a 50-yard run. You would see Gunter flag in his chase, and I think that's why he didn't play a whole lot of special teams. He timed at, 4.66? I know the Packers had a better time on him than that. I think it was an individual workout shortly before that draft. But depends on the position, but you don't want a 4.65 corner out there. Not very much, anyway.
And that's why I think we've seen a lot of Quentin Rollins and Demaryius Randall as the gunners and the holdup guys, because they do have really good speed. Randall was, 4.43? 4.45?
Yeah.
And then Rollins wasn't too far behind, was he?
4.5, 4.6, something
okay,
like that.
Okay, but he's not running 4.7s or 4,
no.
You know, anything like that.
Right.
And then you look at some of the other guys that have been put out there. They've used Trevor Davis as a gunner, and obviously Davis can fly. So, you know, you are going to look for your faster guys out there, and the guys who aren't, like Gunter, as you mentioned, they've got to be real technicians when it comes to their hand placement and things like that.
You know, they're looking for everything. Special teams coaches on long snapper. Now, it's way down the list of priorities, but you look at that 40 time on a long snapper, that's important too.
All right, and we've got one more question here. This comes from Des Carl. He wants to know, with the line already thin and Pinnell's suspension and Kenny Clark's back issue, could B.J. Raji unretire if he decided to and play? As far as I know, he could come back any day he wants. He could come back tomorrow. He could come back next week. He could come back whenever. Doesn't mean the Packers will sign him.
He can sign with any team he wants.
He can sign with
any
team.
He's unrestricted.
He's
a street guy now because it's past June 15th.
Yeah, street free agent. But there's no time frame that he has to be out. He could make the choice to be at Lambeau Field today if he wanted to for a workout.
Yep.
So we, as usual, we've overstayed our welcome. We appreciate everybody for listening. We will be back in a little while, next week probably, after your trip to San Francisco.
Wouldn't miss it, Mike.
I will. I'll miss it. I'll miss it, Bob. I'll be here in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. So you can enjoy that. We'd like to thank Cannon and Dunphy for their support. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.